Good morning, church. It is good to see you all. Good to be together, as always. I love our Sunday morning times of worship and Bible study and times we get to gather around the table. I appreciated Butch's thoughts this morning as we had our time for the Lord's Supper. But it's always good to be together. It's just a special blessing to be a part of a family like this that loves and cares for one another and for our community the way that you all do. So we're thankful to have you with us today. Whether you're in person or you're joining us online, your presence is important. It was an exciting night last night. If y'all didn't get to hear that Laura Bynum is now married, and she's not even a Bynum anymore. She's just gone. And but congratulations to Ken and Marina on definitely getting the better end of that deal, I think. Now, Reed, their current son-in-law, is just a high-quality young man. So thankful that he and Laura found one another. And prayers of blessing on them as they start their marriage. So we're back on track. After our little bit of holidays, we start back to school. School starts this week, and college kids are going to be heading back, and some of y'all got to go back to work. I saw something last night that says, I've got to go back to work. I don't even remember what I do. I certainly don't remember how I did it, but it's the way it's going to be here as we head back here. But we think about getting back into the groove, and so I thought I would ask about your planning. What kind of planner are you as you head back to work in school? How do you get through the next day or the next week or month or even year? Some of y'all are big planners like that. And personal disclaimer, I wouldn't say I'm not a good planner, but that's unfair. I'm a bad planner. I mean, just not even not good. As a general rule, if you tell me I'm going to be doing something or I need to be doing something, if it doesn't go on my calendar right then, it doesn't exist. And my wife will verify this for all of you who want to quiz her about it, because it is in one ear and out the other. And even though I enjoy, like, hey, I think we should do this, and I'll come up with, let's call it the big idea, even if it's not that big, but just the overall idea. I love coming up with those kinds of ideas, but I inevitably am really bad about thinking about all the little things that have to take place in order for that to be a success. So even something simple, and maybe some of you are like me, like I'm doing a simple repair, whether it's on a car or my home, and I don't do anything super hard. I mean, it's gotta be something I can learn on YouTube in 5 minutes. But even if I'm doing something simple like that, it's gonna take mandatory, at minimum, 3 or 4 trips to Home Depot or AutoZone. I've never made a one trip repair. It doesn't, unless it's replacing a light bulb, and even then it's a little sketch. I have to just really work through all of that. But that style, my style, does not work well for a lot of like jobs out there. There's a reason that I am where I am. I can kind of work through the week and I can think about it and change my mind and then go back to it and edit. And there's a reason that I have that kind of job, because some of y'all have to really plan carefully your entire work life, right? And for people who are in business, if you lead a business or own a business or run a department, then you have to plan work schedules and pay schedules and benefit schedules, and there's production and attrition and materials acquisition and transportation and a whole bunch of words I don't even know what they mean. There's all that stuff you have to consider if you're a business planner. If you're teachers, you have to spend all these hours planning out your lessons, and you have to come up with not just like what I'm going to teach, but how am I going to teach it, and not just how am I going to teach it this way, but how am I going to teach it 3 or 4 different ways for all the different types of learners that are in my classroom? How am I going to accommodate this student with disabilities? How am I going to handle classroom discipline or parent communication? There's just a bunch of things you have to consider when you're planning your day. Those of you who are in medical fields, you have to come up with plans of care, right? How to attend to and treat patients who are dealing with a variety of health complications. How do you handle insurance to make sure that it's going to be actually covered and paid for and make sure it can be covered, and managing all of the different prescriptions and how those prescriptions might interact with the person or how they might interact with one another. That's just a bunch of things. And in short, planning is super complicated because we live in a world that has just countless unknown factors. Like, no matter how great you plan, there's just all these other factors that are going to be. And so even when we put in tons of time and tons of effort, and even if you're one of those special people, and I thank the Lord that you're out there, but you are one of those special people who really thinks about all the details and you get all that right, and you can go into all that effort for planning it out and carrying it out, and even then, we might come to the end of it and realize it was all for naught, right? That something we never even considered essentially ruined all of the plans, right? Have you ever felt like that? Well, as we return to our series in the Minor Prophets, because we're getting back to work too, we return to the Minor Prophets, we come to the book of Haggai. And it's a short little book, just two chapters. And the people of God are experiencing something very much like that. That nothing seems to be working out for them because they failed to consider a really important unseen factor, we'll call it. So a little bit of background here about kind of the history and what's taken place to lead up to this point. The northern kingdom of Israel, you may remember, that's already been destroyed. I mean, they were carried off by the Assyrians. The land was taken over by the Assyrians, and then the people were spread out across their vast empire. And so the northern kingdom is essentially gone. The southern kingdom of Judah still remained behind after northern Israel was carried off. But now they were taken captives by the Babylonians. And they lived in Babylonian captivity for 70 years, like generations who were born and lived and died inside of Babylon. So for 70 years they lived in Babylonian captivity until the Babylonian king Cyrus came along, and he allowed this small group, this remnant, to go back to Jerusalem. And he sort of frees them, kind of. They're still his vassals. He was thinking, there could be a few different factors, but he probably was thinking, if I send them back and they can get that country up and running, that's another source of income, right? I'm going to set them free to work and pay taxes to me. So he does that. And they go back home, and they are jubilant to go back to Jerusalem. And when they get there, the city's in a ruins, right? The walls were destroyed when the city was conquered, and houses and buildings were destroyed, and the temple was absolutely destroyed. But these people, they are excited, so they go back, and they get back to work, and they rebuild the walls like Nehemiah talks about, and they start rebuilding their homes, rebuilding their lives, and they lay the foundation for God's house, the temple, and they did all that, and then everything kind of just ground to a halt on the temple. There were some complicating factors, but they halted work on the temple. And now, here we are years after that, and there's another complicating factor, one that you and I might not even really consider, but we know based on what Haggai tells us that there's a new king from Babylon, and they're still subjects of this Babylonian king. They're vassals of this Babylonian king, and this new king's Darius, right? And he is starting off his reign. He's having to deal with a lot of with an Egyptian rebellion that's coming up, and so he's like, I've got to do things differently than my predecessors. So there's these things called the Darius Reforms, basically meaning, for their all intents and purposes, for the Israelites, taxes have been raised, like a lot. Taxes have been raised, and because taxes have been raised, it's not just that you owe him more money, but inflation has become rampant now as well. So this small population of Israelites, they're back home in a unfinished city, and now they're super poor. So in the midst of this sort of economic depression, the prophet Haggai is raised up. And this is what he says in Haggai chapter 1. He says, this is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say, the time has not yet come to rebuild the Lord's house. Then the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai. Is it a time for you yourselves to be living in paneled houses while this house remains a ruin? Now this is what the Lord Almighty says, give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but harvested little. You eat, but never have enough. You drink, but never have your fill. You put on clothes, but are not warm. Some of you can identify this morning, amen? You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. Now, we talk a lot around this time of year about making plans. You've got personal plans, family plans, health plans, business plans. We're pursuing goals. We are achieving success. And we're making promises to others and making promises to ourselves that we are going to do better this year. I'm not just do better. I'm going to be better, right? But it often doesn't take long before those plans start to unravel. And despite our best of intentions, we find ourselves back in the not so healthy but all too familiar rut. It's a comfortable rut. The American author Scott Hildreth, he put it this way. He said, we don't always plan what happens in our life. Sometimes things just unravel, right? They just unravel. I think that probably sums up the way we all feel at some point. They just unravel. And the people of God here in the book of Haggai, they're in that sort of just unraveling. An unraveling that's resulted in them just like working day to day, hand to mouth, trying to take care of themselves, trying to take care of their families. They're struggling to make ends meet. They're struggling to put food on the table, struggling to live in comfortable homes, struggling to make sure their kids get what they need. They're just trying to take care of themselves and just do enough for the day. The problem, from their point of view, was that nothing was working out. Like it was just all kind of going bad, and they didn't know why. And maybe you've had days like that, or weeks like that, or sometimes it feels like months or even years like that, where everything you do just kind of turns to pot, right? Well, not marijuana, but if you're doing that, you've got a different plan altogether. But everything just kind of goes sideways. And so here, this is happening with God's people, and the timing of this message, and I don't normally point out, but if you want to go back and look at verse 1, we can see, based on the timing of this message, we know exactly when it was written. It was written on the first day, essentially, of August in the year 520 BC. And in this case, the date is really important. Sometimes it just gives you a time frame. This was happening about this time. This was happening about that time. But here, it's actually really important because August, for them, that's harvest season. That's when they're supposed to be going out to the fields because this was the time when the grapes and the figs and the pomegranates were all set to be harvested, right? You're supposed to be bountiful at this time of year, but you get the idea that this harvest wasn't exactly going according to plan. That they've gone out to the vineyards, they've gone out to their orchards, and they've gathered everything in. They're like, whew, something is wrong. And on top of that, it's the first day of the month, which we know was the new moon. And that means when it's time for the new moon, you're supposed to go to the temple and bring your first fruits offering. But there were two big problems with this. Number one, they didn't have anything worth giving to give. They're supposed to be making these first fruits offerings. It's supposed to be the best of what they have. They haven't even got good, much less best. They don't have anything worth giving. And number two, there was no temple. There was no place to even carry it to give it, right? And so from their vantage point, problem number one up here, this is the big problem, because we don't even have anything worth giving to give. And we've been working on that problem, and we just can't solve it. And so they're spending so much time, so much energy, focusing on trying to have enough. Maybe you can identify, but focusing on trying to having enough that they haven't even stopped to consider the second issue, the lack of a place to go and do it. They're so busy looking at how little they have, they fail to notice the second problem. In chapter 2, God describes their situation this way. And he doesn't just tell them, like, what your situation is. Finally, he tells them why. Why is it you're struggling so much? And I love the way he describes it here. He says in chapter 2, beginning at verse 16, when anyone came to a heap of 20 measures, there were only 10. Oh, you know what I'm talking about? You go to expecting to find 20 and there's only 10. When anyone went to a wine vat to draw 50 measures, there were only 20. Maybe this has happened to you before. You're like, oh, I've got to pay for this. And you reach into your wallet and you know, I know I've got a 20 in here. And you pull it out and you've got a 5 and some singles instead of that 20 you thought you had. Or you think, oh, I've got to go take care of this. I have plenty of stuff on hand to fix this problem, to solve this issue, to make this repair, to feed the dog, or whatever it is. I've got plenty of this. And then you go and you discover, oh, man, I thought I had enough, but I didn't. That's what they were going through. And God goes on to explain why this is happening. He says, I struck all the work of your hands with blight, mildew, and hail. Yet you did not return to me, declares the Lord. They were struggling. The reason they didn't have enough, because they would not listen and return to God. They had failed to consider God in any of their own problems, right? They never stopped to think about anything or anyone other than themselves. They never wondered why, if maybe what they were going through was related to their relationship with God. They never understood why their plans, good plans, hard work, good soil, good seed, they never stopped to consider or understand why those plans weren't working out. Tommy this morning used a great verse from Proverbs 16, chapter 16, verse 9. It says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Man plans the way, this is the way it's going to go. And God says, no, it doesn't. Right? This is the way it's going to work out. This is the plan for my life. This is what my marriage is going to look like. This is what my kids are going to look like. This is what my education is going to look like. This is what my job is going to look like. And we plan, we're like, this is what my house is going to be like. My car is going to be like. The kind of dogs I'm going to own. We plan. This is how it's going to go. And it never actually goes exactly according to plan. And we understand that. But sometimes not only does it not go to plan, sometimes it goes terribly awry. And things don't just not work, they actually fall apart. So brothers and sisters, I'm not trying to make blanket statements about you or your situation or anybody else's situation, but sometimes things don't work out. Not because we didn't plan good enough or we're not smart enough to make good plans or because we didn't work hard enough or because we didn't have the right resources. Sometimes things don't work out because we're doing it all without ever considering the Lord. I bet you've heard this quote before. It's a Scottish poet. His name is Robert Burns. And you probably don't know that. But he said, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. At the very least, you've probably heard of the play or the movie of Mice and Men that this it references that poem. He's just saying, you know, no matter how hard you work and how good you plan, sometimes just things just go awry. It happens all the time, right? But God goes on to tell his people why it's happening, and then he gives them this promise. On the day that they laid the first stones on the temple rebuild, he tells them, he's like, okay, I want you to sit up and pay attention. Note this day. And from now on, I want you to see if it's any different. On the first day, you lay the first stone on top of the other. Pay attention and see if things then don't just change. Because from now on, I'm going to bless you. Now that you're doing what I've asked you to do, now that you've returned to me and you're listening to me, I want you to see the difference in your lives, because from now on, I am blessing you. Brothers and sisters, we're at an inflection point in our country, in the world, in our congregation, in our personal lives. We are at one of those points where it would be a good idea for us to pay attention and see what happens when we listen to God. You've tried it your way. I've tried it my way for a long time. For a long time, we've tried it our way. And I know how trying it my way works. Sometimes it works okay. Sometimes it doesn't work so okay. But I know. I know how trying it Dustin's way works. What God asks us to do is to try it his way. Just try it his way. And see if things aren't different. Because, brothers and sisters, God wants to bless you. I'm not a health and wealth or an abundance gospel preacher. Some people will preach that, you know, if you'll just do good and give God money, he'll make you rich. Maybe you've heard that. It's a really popular message, because it's like, it's kind of treating God like investing in the stock market. Like, if you'll just buy good stocks, the returns will happen. And I don't think God operates like that. But I do feel very comfortable saying that when we do God things, we finally get to live a life of flourishing, of fulfillment. Remember when he said, you eat food and you're still hungry, you drink and you still don't have your fill? Then no matter how much you get, no matter how much you have, it's never enough. And if you want to have enough, to be enough, to do enough, it all hinges not on how hard you work, how much you have to start with, how much you even have to end with. It all hinges on where God is in that equation. Because if it's done without God, it will never be enough. It will never be enough. We have to begin with, to start with, to plan with, to work with, and to finish with God, or it all amounts to nothing. We can go through our whole lives, and even if everything goes according to plan, right? My marriage goes exactly the way I thought it would. My job goes exactly the way I thought it would. My kids go exactly the way I thought it would. We can go through all of life, and even if everything works out exactly the way we thought it would, come to the end of it and wind up with a handful of sand, because it all vanishes away. God doesn't want you to end up with dust. He wants you to end with blessing. So my prayer for you, my prayer for us as a congregation, is that we may be a people who plan with God, who lean on God, not only for our own understanding, but in all our ways acknowledge him, so that he will direct our paths. And if we can pray for you this morning, encourage you, lift you up, for strength, for forgiveness, for help, we want you to come now as we stand and as we sing.